I try to buy sites from people where they're already making some money, they're already getting some traffic, and then use, you know, my team and some of my strategies to add content to that site and then, you know, better optimize it. I find that SEO is, for me, like, you can almost read too much about it, and it gets overwhelming. At least that's how I've found.
Welcome to the Growth Genius podcast, brought to you by Infodigit, an organization focused on search engine optimization and conversion rate optimization. I'm Kaushal Thakkar, founder of Infodigit and your host for this show. Today, we have the pleasure of having with us the founder and owner of Kane Brands, Jake Kane. Jack creates and acquires online businesses, usually content-based websites, and then uses content strategy and SEO to make them more profitable. I met him recently at the DA Summit in Chicago and was impressed with his accomplishments. Let's welcome Jack Kane. Hi, Jack. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And how was the road trip back home?
Oh, it was fantastic. You know, so the event was in Chicago. I'm in Cincinnati, which is just a short, you know, 5-hour drive. Not too bad, but yeah, it was interesting. First time I've been to a conference of that nature, related around, you know, privacy and advertising and things like that. So it was fun getting to share my story a little bit, but also met some interesting people and got to go to a Cubs game at Wrigley Field, which was fun. So yeah, we made a nice trip out of it. It was great.
That's really good. Jack, tell us a little more about Kane Brands.
Yeah, sure. So Kane Brands basically is kind of the umbrella under which I own, you know, about a dozen or so different websites and other, you know, little projects and shiny objects that I come up with. So I have about a team of probably 20 or so writers and editors that'll fluctuate a little bit, as well as people that help me post things to my websites. And as you mentioned, the core of it is content-based websites. And so some of those are ones that I started myself. The oldest one that I have is my first website I ever created, which is ballparksavvy.com, which is all about traveling to Major League Baseball stadiums. Mm-hmm. So that's something that, you know, was kind of scratching my own itch at the time. We were planning a baseball road trip, my dad and I, and in doing that research to go to Fenway Park and Yankee Stadium, just didn't see the information that, you know, I wanted to know out there. And so decided to create that site. And fast forward, you know, 10 years or so, came a little bit of a side hustle, started building other sites, and then eventually got to where I started acquiring sites. And that's most of what I do now, is I try to buy sites from people where they're already making some money, they're already getting some traffic, and then use, you know, my team and some of my strategies to add content to that site and then, you know, better optimize it, things like that, hopefully to make it more profitable. And so I'm kind of partial to doing that now, just because it's a bit of a head start as opposed to trying to start something brand new.
Understood. That helps. And Jack, how do you make money out of the website? So let's go a little deeper on that side as well.
Sure. Yeah. So it's almost always a combination of affiliate income and ad revenue. So, you know, about half of my sites are on Mediavine, about half of them are on what's now called Raptive, used to be called AdThrive. So I try to, you know, have the traffic up to a level where I can get into those networks, and then basically they take care of the ads from there. And then the affiliate stuff varies from site to site. So, you know, typically if it's a product, you know, I do a decent amount of money with like the Amazon affiliate program still. But, you know, I've got quite a few just one-off programs. You know, somebody maybe has a certain product and they have their own affiliate program. So for example, like with Ballpark Savvy, one thing we do if we're going, you know, let's just say our guide to Wrigley Field, you know, where to park or how to get to the stadium. And so we have an affiliate relationship with a parking company called Spot Hero, where you can reserve parking ahead of time for an event. And so we'll, you know, send people there. If they buy parking, we get a commission. And so similar with like a ticket broker website where we can make a commission if you buy tickets through our site. But yeah, it's like I said, it's usually kind of a mix. And that's one of my strategies that I do when I buy a site. If it's, you know, maybe they're running ads only, I'll look for some affiliate programs in that niche that maybe will help me add some revenue to the existing traffic that we're getting. So I do try to diversify the income if I can. Makes the site, I think, a little bit stronger, kind of add some revenue to it as well.
Okay. Thanks for that. And while you have so many different websites which you're working on, if I may ask, which would be the highest profitable website or ROI generating website for you?
Sure. Yeah. So I, you know, don't share all of my, most of my sites publicly, but one that I have, I did share publicly recently that I own, that's my most profitable site, is roastycoffee.com. That site was an acquisition, and kind of got interviewed about that on Google Publisher Stories a few months ago. So that kind of, that was the first time that I sort of publicly shared that that was my site. But, you know, on that site, if you look at the about page, you won't see my face or my name. And that's generally how I do it with my sites. I don't like to be the brand because I do, I have sold sites before, and I like to not be, you know, super dependent on me. So I try to make sure that I can easily be replaced and that I'm not, you know, if I go away, it's not that the site goes away. So yeah, so with that, you know, we hire a lot of people that are coffee experts to create the content, and I just help run the strategy behind the scenes. But yeah, I would say that right now that's probably my biggest site that I have.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that as well. And Jack, many of our audience are search engine optimizers, and they would love to hear about the art and science of doing SEO that you implement on such kind of websites. Please tell us at least about a few elements of SEO that needs to be focused on while working on such website projects.
Okay, sure. I'll give my approach to it. I find that SEO is, for me, like, you can almost read too much about it, and it gets overwhelming. At least that's how I've found. So I try to keep it pretty simple. I do use the tool Phrase, the optimizer tool, similar to like Surfer SEO or whatever. So our team, we write in Phrase, and we do kind of use that when we're building out an outline, just to see what's there. But again, we're not aiming for a particular, you know, 100 optimization score or anything like that, where we've used just the right number of phrases and words that go with this article. So we don't over obsess about that. Really, for me, it starts with keyword research, which is kind of my background. So I spent years working with and for Spencer Hawes of Niche Pursuits, and he previously owned Longtail Pro, which was a keyword research software. And back in the day, that's kind of how I got started. And so he hired me to run that business when he still owned it. And yeah, so that's kind of my background. So I really, to me, the biggest step is like, what are we creating content about? You know, probably 85 to 90% of my traffic is organic. So, you know, I'm thinking about what are the gaps in the content that we're creating versus other people. In other words, what have our competitors written about that we have not? So making sure that we're zeroed in on the right topic is a huge part of the battle. And then once we've done that, if we're tackling an informational topic about, let's just say, what's the best food to eat at a Major League Baseball stadium or something like that, then we just try to cover the topic as thoroughly as we can, right, with the human in mind first and foremost. You know, so we try to give a quick, one adjustment we've made over the last year or two is that we try to, if it is sort of a question, we try to answer that very quickly, like in the introduction, and then, you know, try to make sure we're being helpful in that way. So we're not burying under 1,000 words of fluff. The answer is way down on the page. We try to really just get into it. And that's, you know, it sounds simple, but that's kind of pretty much it. You know, we try to make sure that we stay in our lane, as far as from like a topical authority side of things. You know, we don't venture too far out, try to stay pretty focused on things that matter to our audience. And yeah, I mean, we follow that and kind of rinse and repeat and publish, you know, fairly consistently. And that's what wins the day for us.
Okay, that helps, Jack. And one follow-up question on that particular thing was, let's say you mentioned that you do not focus too much on the over optimization, or you don't get obsessed with SEO. In such a situation, how important are elements like, let's say, page speed and some other minor things like, let's say, ensuring the canonicals are in place, the pages are loading perfectly. So how important is that? Would you pay attention to that, or would it be something which you would not worry too much about that as well?
So I do pay attention to it a little bit. The fact that, like, you know, my understanding is, like, when you're running ads the way that we do, like with Mediavine and with AdThrive, that's not the best for like page speed scores, just because of how those load. But, you know, of the things that we can control, most of my sites, there's a couple of sites that run on a custom theme, but most of them are running on GeneratePress Premium, which my understanding is a pretty lightweight theme. And so when I have people that help me set those up a little bit, we do try to focus on just keeping things light and nimble as best we can, because I do believe that matters, you know, like how quickly the page loads and all of these things. But certainly not my specialty. It's just one of those things that we try to just do as a habit, you know what I mean? Just not over bloating it. So, which I've been guilty of that in the past. So I if anything, I try to, if we've made those mistakes, I do try to clean them up as we go. Cause I do think that it's important, if anything, from a user experience perspective. And I think that that ultimately bleeds through to how Google ranks a site. So, you know, making sure we're passing Core Web Vitals and all those things, definitely try to make sure that we're sort of checking those boxes.
Sure. So you have been intelligent enough and smart enough to ensure that the right platforms are selected from day one. So you need not worry much about those other nitty-gritties at a later stage. And okay, a little bit of focus is fair. Thanks, that helps. Jack, the other important thing in any such website, specifically content websites, is the content strategy. And I was going through these websites, and the way you have strategized the content is really amazing, right? You've gone into the niche and taken care of those elements. Tell us more about content strategy. How do you plan the content strategy of your website once you acquire it? If you could take the example of Roasty Coffee, nothing like it. But yeah, any other example is also fine.
Sure. A couple of big ones. I feel like one that's, you know, I'll mention it, but I feel like a lot of people have dug pretty far into this, which is like competitor research. So, you know, taking your SEO tool of choice. I usually use Ahrefs, but you could do the same with SEMrush and probably others. Mm-hmm. And just figuring out who are the big guys in the space. And so when I'm acquiring a site, that's the first thing I look for. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that I'm getting into a niche about, you know, knitting and sewing or something like that. What I want to look for is who are the big sites there, right? So I look at some of the more competitive keywords. I see who's ranking. How many keywords overall are they ranking for in these tools? And then I dig through there and kind of see like what's missing. Okay. So I know, even though those estimates aren't perfect, I can see that site gets approximately 10 times the amount of traffic that this new site that I just bought does. So I kind of know where the ceiling is. And so I dig into that as step one to see, all right, what big topics, what questions have they answered? What content have they covered that we have not? And that kind of becomes step one, because you see a site in a very similar topic that's just further along than we are. And we could just say, okay, what have they done that we haven't? How can we do that better? You know? And so that's, I feel like, a pretty simple, repeatable way. And you can always, you know, you come look at that 6 months from now and you're going to see new sites that have popped up since then. You're going to get new ideas. And so I feel like that's one of those things that you can just do constantly over years. And pretty much never run out of ideas. Another thing, strategy that I've started doing over the last year or two, really trying to focus more on like informational content, especially with, you know, Google had put out a couple updates about like product review updates and things like that. And so certain sites I had that I had one site that got hit by that, actually, a smaller site, but it was almost all product reviews. So just trying to like make sure that my sites are balanced in terms of not too many reviews and, you know, balancing that out with informational content. So one way that I would do is I've got a list of just like 20 or so question starters, you know, who, what, where, when, can, are, so on and so forth. And so I'll take a big topic. If it were coffee, maybe it's espresso machines or Keurig, like a brand name. I'll plug that into the keyword explorer. And of course it's going to pull up, you know, millions of keywords. And then I do the includes. And then I put in those 20 question starters and filter it down by that. And then if needed, you know, I could filter, if there's still just a, you know, tens of thousands of words, I can then filter down even further by like keyword volume or something like that. But from there, I kind of like, it gets a little complicated, but at a high level, I use a tool called Keyword Chef. And there may be other ways to do this, but basically what I do is I'll pull that list that I come up with. So let's just say that I end up with 2000 question related words about a Keurig, right? And I plug those into Keyword Chef, and they have kind of a bulk SERP analyzer. So it'll pull all the SERP results for all 2000 of those keywords and then kind of gives them a similarity score. And so what I'm doing in that process is just because a lot of those questions are going to be kind of the same thing, right? Like, how do I clean a Keurig? And then how do I clean my Keurig? Keurig cleaning ideas, right? Things like that, which are like, they're different phrases, but it's really bringing up the same results in Google. You know, it's the same topic. And so I use that process to kind of like figure out what's actually unique versus what, you know, these eight things, this is really just one topic. This is one article, you know, so we're not creating articles that are too similar. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I do for informational keywords, and feel like I find a lot of good ideas by doing that.
Okay, thanks. Jack, on the informational queries that you mentioned and the informational search results, with the advent of generative AI, the entire space is not yet seeing some changes, but some minor things are being seen. So at least what is your perspective in terms of generative AI? How is it going to impact this space in the coming years?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that none of us know for sure. My perspective on it, of course, is to wait and see, which has always been, that's kind of my approach to just about everything. I know the AI, this is different, but there have been things over the years, like when Google announced, I think like Core Web Vitals update, and then that was coming, and that these different things were going to be ranking factors. And there have been many things, like if you're in Facebook groups and stuff, that are just Armageddon, you know what I mean? Where everybody's freaking out about it for months, and then it comes out and it's like, wasn't that big of a deal. So I'm not saying that AI is not a big deal. I'm just saying that like none of, you know, everything now I think is kind of speculation as far as how it's going to affect rankings and then ultimately click-throughs. Mm-hmm. My hope / thought is, you know, it was a big deal, and it's kind of gradually become more and more where, you know, the Google snippets, right, make a lot more zero click searches, you know? So when somebody searches how many ounces are in a pound or whatever, Google like steals the answer from your site or whatever and shows it at the top. And most people get that quick answer and they leave and they're not clicking through anyway. So my sense is early on is that it may just replace that, right? So a lot of the searches that today are already zero click searches, they're going to stay zero click searches, and maybe there will be some more. But I think people that really want to read a user's perspective on something, you know, a little bit more complicated query or whatever, I think that they're still going to click through just like they click through today. And so maybe that's a best case scenario for us. I don't know, but that's kind of where I'm leaning right now. But
yeah, that's fair.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
Better to stay in the present than worrying about the future at this point in time. And you rightly mentioned, nobody knows right now what's going to happen. So why worry about it? We'll see as it comes.
Right. Yeah, that's how I approach it.
That's a good way. Jack, the other website, which at least I loved reading through some of the travel stories, is samplingamerica.com. Travel is something which every one of us takes up during our life, but nobody documents it in as detail as you have done it. That's something at least which I loved. Tell us more about samplingamerica.com. How did that idea came about? What was the story behind it, and how was the overall experience with it?
Sure. Yeah. So Sampling America really started as just like a personal travel journal that, you know, I shared with friends and family. Of course, it was on the internet, but nobody was really finding it because I wasn't doing any of the strategies that I just talked about, right? I was just writing about our family's travels. So I've got my wife and I've got three kids. And so the last 2 years, we homeschooled them during the height of COVID. And then we also traveled quite a bit during that time, like for an extended period of time. And so when we would go in a different city or whatever, or take a trip. I would write about that, you know, and so just shared fun, you know, travel stories from the road. And I thought if anything, it'll just be fun for us to refer back to and kind of have those memories. So I would try to write about those trips in the moment. And it's just kind of a creative outlet. More recently, I don't have a desire to be as I mentioned earlier, I don't really like being like the face of my projects, and this is no different. So, I'm not trying to be like a travel influencer or anything like that with like a big social media following. That just feels like way too much pressure. So we've been building more content though, because obviously, you know, having a successful travel blog can be a great thing for a variety of reasons. And so we have been building out more content about national parks and things like that, and just kind of going through my more traditional method, having writers, you know, write that content and those sorts of things. So over the last 6 months or so, trying to build it out into a more proper site, not just a personal travel journal, and did get that site approved to run Mediavine ads just like a month or so ago. So it is, you know, making some money now, just a little bit, but working on hopefully building that out into something a little bit more interesting that gets more traffic. So it's nice because it is a site where I don't care too much, just because it's, you know, again, I had it for years where it was making nothing. I had no plans to make it a big part of the business. So I do a little bit more experimental stuff with some AI content, at least AI assisted content, some different social media strategies that we're trying to generate traffic and these sorts of things. Because again, I feel like if it doesn't go well, it's not like it's really a big part of my business at this point. So I feel like it's good to have some like testing grounds like that. So I view that site like that.
Great. Thanks, Jack. Jack, one last question on the particular topic. So what has been the major learning for you over the years, which you would like to share with our audience today, be it on the content front or the subject front, which we are speaking of, or it could be even on your personal front, anything which you feel that the fellow marketers and growth leaders should take it away from us today?
Sure. I've shared, you know, before that when I first got started, the book that kind of started it all for me was The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. I read that back, I think, in 2007 or 2008. And that's what led me into trying to figure out how can I do something to where I can eventually replace myself, outsource a lot of the work, not have to physically be in a certain place to do the work. And that's what led me to this journey, right? And so that's kind of the biggest thing that I've learned, is that when you do get to that point to, like, you know, hire people and eventually replace yourself, you know, so once you even start having a measure of success, you know, in the early days, I was doing everything, right? Like I was creating the sites, doing the designs, writing the content, self-editing and publishing it. Well, now, you know, I'm still involved from like the content strategy perspective, but that's the part that I really enjoy. And I've hired people to do pretty much everything else, right? So like when we do the travel that I mentioned, like when we homeschool those couple of years, you know, if we would go away for a month, I really didn't have to work, you know, for that month. I could just kind of check in as needed. And that's kind of worth its weight in gold. I mean, that's when I started 15 years ago or whatever. I mean, that was the ultimate goal. Like that's really what I was after. So it was pretty exciting to get there. But I feel like a lot of people, and I did this for a while, you sort of feel like that nobody can do it like I can do it, whatever that thing is. And so you end up, because you're, you know, maybe a perfectionist, which is not me, but you don't want to give that up, right? And so what happens is you become the bottleneck. You don't get that opportunity because you just refuse to like train anybody else to do it. Or you might be worried that, hey, they're not going to do it 100% the way I would do it. You can't get there. So for me, that's like the biggest learning, is like, I had little things like that over the years, but then once I handed it off, there were a few bumps like getting started, but it was like, once I did it, I was like, I should have done this a lot sooner, you know, because it really does free up your time to focus on things that you're more interested in, or things that are maybe more important to you. And so for me, that's been probably the biggest, most helpful thing that I've learned on the journey that I'm on.
Okay. And how do you handle those bumps if it becomes too many of those bumps then?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, not everybody's going to be a good fit, you know. So I basically, you know, if it's a writer, for example, that's probably the first thing that you would hire, right? So I hire people for a paid test, you know, and you'll know right away if it's like close or if it's not even close. If it's not even close, hey, thanks for your time, we move on, right? But if it's something close, oh, hey, but they didn't do this, whatever. I've usually found that was my fault because I didn't ask them to do that, right? If it's a formatting thing or whatever, I didn't have good enough documentation. So I built that up over time, you know, created like a template for them to follow and that sort of thing, which cuts down on that. And so I think that that's the first thing, making sure that you document things well, but then giving like feedback. And so for me, the most helpful thing is I just do like a screen record video. You know, I go in and, hey, we need to watch out for this and let's change this and whatever. And I've gotten feedback that that's really helpful when I do that, you know? And so go through and do it yourself. And you've probably been doing it yourself already, so you know. But just taking the time when you find somebody that you see that talent, go ahead and dig in and take the time to like really explain it, make sure they have what they need. And it's going to get you through those bumpy patches. So I don't know. I think sometimes it's like, if it's not perfect the first time, you're just like, ah, forget it. I'll just do it. You know, but if you take the time to do that and invest like in the right people, I found that it really pays off. But you know, most people aren't going to be the right people, but that's how I usually work through it.
Perfect. Thanks, Jack. Quite a few learnings over there. Jack, where can our audience connect with you or follow you?
Yeah, so I don't really have a site where I'm sharing, you know, things like this necessarily. I do occasionally, like if you want to look up, I've been on the Niche Pursuits podcast with Spencer Hawes, and I'm still on there occasionally as a guest. We talk about like SEO news and things like that, but I'm definitely in the archives where we've done some things over there. But you know, like I said, the site earlier is ballparksavvy.com. If you go to the about page there, I've got a little bit of personal info and a way to get in touch with me if you'd like. Always happy to, you know, answer random questions via email and sort of things like that. But yeah, probably ballparksavvy.com, or you'll find me at nichepursuits.com every now and then. And that's probably where you'd best find me.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Jack. It was a pleasure having you on this particular show. Lots of insightful information. And the audience is going to just love this. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Growth Genius. I hope you learned how to build websites that make money from Jack today. If you have any questions for Jack or for us, please include them in the comment section and we would get back to you. Thank you. Now go out there and create growth for yourself and your organization. Thank you.